This is Tech Talk. I got Michael, Tech Talk Casper, and I think maybe, let's see, oh, Dave? Dave?
I'm just kidding you.
He's there.
It's Dave Sparky Saga Hockey on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, indeed. And you sound almost like you're in the room with me. Oh my gosh, it's brilliantly sharp. We were talking before the show. You had problems with your internet, so glad to see those got resolved.
Yeah, the technician came out early this morning, and got me up and running. So I'm very happy.
Fantastic. Well, and, you know, I don't know how they fixed it, and I can't keep this from happening again, but I do know why it broke.
Why?
Kim Kardashian's butt.
Yeah.
She broke the internet. Didn't you hear? She broke the internet. And in fact, wait a second. Hold on. I think I might have something for this. Hold on. Just here. Hold on. I've got a little. I should have queued this up here, of course, intelligently before.
I do that.
Yeah. Oh, I know exactly. I mean, come on. That's so like, you know, pro level stuff. Okay. Hold on. I've got this queued up here. Here we go.
Anybody could do that and do a good show.
Oh, exactly. It's gonna be a challenge. Yeah. All right. Here. This is what I was thinking of. All right. That's enough of that, I guess.
I don't know how the board's wired, but I can't hear outbound audio.
Oh, okay. You know why? That's because you are on the same channel, the same source line, unfortunately, as the as my aux plug-in. I was playing a little. That was South Park. That was Butters' version of what in the butt. And I'll cap the show off with that today, so you can listen to it in the podcast too.
That's great.
I tell you what, that'll be our podcast only song of the week. In fact, what I'll do is I'll insert that right in the middle of the show there. Maybe when we do a break or something. So that was what happened, Dave. Kim Kardashian just. She laid that down, and that she claimed that was going to break the internet. And apparently, it didn't have as much effect in the U.S., but in Canada, it did.
Yeah, we get the second tier stuff here. We get the leftover U.S. gear.
That's right. Well, but
the problem was just my modem. Ah. It was just my, and I'd swapped one out, and that was broken too. So
that's so fun. I love that. So that.
Yeah, I've been playing modem and router roulette.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, okay. Now this is good though too, because of course later on this morning we're going to have Mr. Garmin. He's going to come on and talk to us about what the original transmission speed of the first router used on the internet was, and then also too, this is a great segue in. Is I don't know if you've been paying attention, but at least here in the U.S., that whole net neutrality thing is rearing its ugly head again, and our leader, President Barack Obama, has thrown down some flags and gauntlets and so on, and there's been responses too from AT&T and others. And in fact, AT&T was miffed enough about how President Obama was attempting to reclassify our internet access as a public utility, like for legal purposes. They were so miffed about this and what the impact and implication may be for them that they actually put the brakes on an enormous project that they had that was going to roll fiber out throughout the country and increase the speed of access for everyone. And that was something that the FCC is very, very much behind, is seeing these mega companies putting in the investment in order to extend what is now considered really, you know, not just an option, but something that's a requirement for individuals around the country to be connected to society and education and other things. So,
the good news is President Obama came out in favor of net neutrality. The bad news is he wants to regulate it quite strictly as a public utility.
Yep. Yep. So,
which it's kind of the internet's kind of been in a gray area of regulation, which is good news and bad news as well. So and also this could bring taxes. The same kind of taxes you pay for your telephone lines, your telephone service would then be applicable to your internet access, which currently they are not. So there's good news and bad news in all of this.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think that's part of what's making the conversation about it difficult right now, too, is there is a lot of mix and there is a lot of up and down and gray area to it. And it's also a very it's really a difficult thing to fully comprehend, understand, you know, get your hooks into, even if you're a technical person. And so as a layperson, which certainly President Obama is a layperson, many of the members at the FCC are also lay people in this field, I think they're coming up with regulations that seem to make sense from a, you know, like a spiritual standpoint of, hey, information ought to be free, you know, that kind of thing. And you look at it as the highway and Al Gore's tubes and, you know, oh, we don't want to give the fast tubes here to them. Yeah, it's there's a lot more going on, unfortunately, behind the scenes than that would make it appear, or that there was, like, with the baby bell breakup and things like this. It's a tough subject. And we're starting to, unfortunately, I think we're starting to have that split in individuals that you see happening in politics so often, where people cleave to one idea or the other, and then relentlessly and unmovably, you know, hold fast to that, you know, regardless.
Yeah, like trench warfare in World War One. They dig in and...
Yeah,
just and throw bombs at each other and occasionally make a charge. So but at least there's more discussion about it now. Before, early on, they were trying to sneak through, kind of, or with little fanfare or public input, trying to implement a tiered system of access and speeds. So now at least it's seeing the light of day, and hopefully that'll make the process better.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see if it does or not. The one thing that I would hate to see happen with it is for this to become, you know, truly politicized, where net neutrality becomes a Democratic stance, you know, and you know, no net neutrality becomes a Republican stance, because at that point then all intelligent conversation stops and and it just becomes about you hate children. Come on, you know, it shouldn't be about that. It's kind of like the issues that we have, I think, throughout our government. You have these committees and groups that make decisions about highly technical issues, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, specifically about, like, our science committees or funding committees and things like this. But who are they led by? They're not led by scientists. They're not led by experts in a field. You know, even these here typically aren't led necessarily by someone who's an expert technically. At best, you'll hope for someone that's, you know, either out of the industry recently, so we're not sure what their ties are, or hoping to get into the industry. So again, we don't know what their ties are, or they're just completely clueless. In which case, you know, who knows what decision they're going to make?
You don't need to be an expert in the field to regulate it, do you?
Oh, come on. Hey, just you know, you get a guess.
and it's a big shock, by the way, that a big telecom is leveraging a financial investment to get the result that they want. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah,
that's a shock. My hands are on my cheeks right now,
yeah.
And I'm making the O.
Exactly.
Shape with my mouth.
Well,
I can't believe they're doing that.
And sadly, and that's where it gets so gray. And you know, is that there is a lot of money at stake here. There's a lot of information available that is not accessible to the general public. You know, the way that AT&T manages and maintains their internal infrastructures and network, is, to a great degree, you know, considered IP, intellectual property. And so they're not able to release some of the information that would make these decisions a little more transparent. But they also, too, they have just enormous amounts of money on the line for this decision to be made one way or the other, as does the government, as do you and I, you know, because this will directly impact what comes out of our pocket as well. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the taxes are for communication stuff is pretty, you know, the government gets its money, and the internet has escaped that thus far.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So and it's flourished, and in some ways it's unfair competition. I mean, if you're shopping online for something, you know, Amazon's got something for the same price as Walmart does, or something like that. The difference of the tax, you know, or the shipping that factors into the cost of the item. So.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And that's that is kind of an interesting thing. Now, I know you posted an article though too that Walmart is going to match any price that you can find on Amazon. Is that what
I like that. Not just Amazon, any online. I've gone to other stores where I think Best Buy has been doing that for a while now, maybe a year or so, if mm-hmm. I recall correctly. But now Walmart, if you have an online source for a price, Walmart will match it.
Wow. Can I make websites. Can I make a – I'll make a store. I'll put a price.
I think the thing is, when I did do it at Best Buy, I brought it in, and then they have to go online and verify it.
Well, that's right. I could make a website. I've got $10 for a domain name. I'll call it Mike's Super Shopping Store, lowdiscountprices.com.
And then Walmart put in an order for 1,000 pieces, right?
Yeah,
whatever,
yeah.
Selling too low.
I would just, you know, jack the price up $10 and then go over to, or lower the price $10 and then go over to Best Buy and buy 1,000 from them. So, I'm sure there's some fine print in there somewhere that's not going to let you get a 4K TV for $350 or something. But
thank you for illustrating to our listeners why we have not been successful financially.
Oh man, well it was like I have this reputation now. I don't know why. So I went to the Verizon Wireless store last night. It wasn't
open. Way cool. I want to hear about this.
It wasn't open. I jumped the line. I was invited. I was invited to come in for a special media premiere for the show. Now, this is on the Magnificent Mile in Chicago, right at the end of it, across from the Hancock Center. And it's a gorgeous new store. It was really cool to be able to go in and kind of check it out ahead of time. It's opening today, as a matter of fact, in almost precisely an hour. They're going to open at 11:11 a.m. I don't know why the 11:11, but 11:11 a.m. is when they're opening. Jennifer Hudson is going to be there, and she's going to be performing. And so I did not get to meet Jennifer Hudson, but I did get to meet Philippe, and Paul Ulrich was there. We've spoken to him before and all that. Some great people showed me around. Three stories of just packed to the gills with really, really cool geek toys, stuff, wearables, Google, iPad or iPhone stuff, everything you can think of, all, of course, hooked together through the Verizon network. And just really neat stuff. I love they've got some setups so that you can actually put on and try out, like a Fitbit or a Jawbone Up or some of the wearables, and then go on a treadmill and see how it works. And they have the treadmill set up on a with a big screen TV in front of you, and you can choose where you want to go, where you want to walk, and so you can walk on this treadmill along the route you've chosen. It shows up on the screen.
As opposed to actually going for a walk, you can go for a virtual walk.
Have you been outside lately? It's too dang cold for that, Dave. Nobody wants to walk outside. Come on. Come on. Oh, man.
That's, I guess. But it's only 2D. You don't get, a 4D.
Sorry. Yeah. No. Just the 2D. But you're on a neat little treadmill there. The other thing that they have, too, they have set up a toy area kind of thing where you can go and play with a couple of little drones. They have a flying drone, and they have a little rolling around jumping drone. And the jumping around rolling drone, it's got a camera on it, so it's so cool. And you can manage it and control it all from your phone. There's an app on your phone, and so you can look through its eyes and kind of zoom around and all this. And they show you how to use that, and you can play around with it. And, of course, you know, and it runs around, and it's this cute little thing, and it jumps up in the air, and it goes cheep, 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 you know, makes all these little weird noises and all that. So, of course, my first question was, how do you turn those noises off so that when you're sneaking this thing into your neighbor's house, they don't know? And, they said, you know, we've had a lot of people come through and look at this, and you are the only person that has ever asked.
Well, you know what would be great would be to sneak it in the house and then quiet on silent and then turn the noises on once it's in the middle of the house. That would scare the hell out of your neighbors.
Exactly.
That would be great.
And not only would it scare the heck out of them, but you'd have it all on video. So you'd... to post that on YouTube the very next day. It'd be a lot of fun. But it is very cool. I would, if you're, you know, down in that area, it's a neat thing. They've got a three-story video wall that kind of highlights what's going on inside the store. You can customize, too. This is the other thing. They have a lot of customizable things. So you can go in and you can actually take a picture of yourself on a green screen with whatever you want in the background and put that on a like on an OtterBox phone case, you know, and put these things together, and it's neat stuff, really neat stuff.
But that sounds very exciting. Three stories on the Mag Mile,
full of
gadgets. Wow.
Yeah, and every section of it is like a different. They call them like lifestyle. So a little different lifestyle or life thing that you go through. You can start off on the bottom where they have a whole sound system set up, and you can play around with using you know, the equipment for sound creation and all this stuff. Once you create it, you can save it, share it, put it on social media, do whatever you want to. And then all the way up to the top where they've got more of the business-oriented stuff and full-blown little pizza shop that you can go in and you can see how the cash register machines and the mobile pay devices and Square and things like that all come together. And I was impressed. I was impressed. It was a cool thing. I was very excited to be there. Very smart, knowledgeable people. They're also going to be running a series of educational seminars. So you don't have to be a Verizon customer. You can go in. They will tell you and talk to you about mobile devices, mobile products, some of the new technologies that are coming out. And I guess they run those pretty regularly. They're going to have a schedule out somewhere about what they are. And just like the you know, the Genius Bars for Apple that everybody's familiar with, they're going to be kind of doing some of the similar
stuff. My experience, there's a great need for that. Just, you know, people have these wonderful, very capable devices and very limited knowledge about how to use them.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be great.
Yeah. I thought it was very, very cool. You know, before we bring Jay on, I'll tell you the other thing that I did when I was downtown, though, which was neat. Shouts out. This was great. I don't know if you recall, but a few weeks, a month or so ago, a couple months ago, we had on Zhusong Mi, who is the CEO of BigMarker.com, and he was gracious enough to allow me to stop into his offices, show me around. Bought me a sandwich. So, you know, full disclosure here.
Wait. That's not full disclosure. What kind of sandwich did he buy?
Oh, it was delicious. It was a sandwich, sandwich cubano, man. It was fantastic. At Havana is a little restaurant down there, a Cuban restaurant. He actually spent a lot of time in Miami himself, so he's a big fan of the Cuban food, and delicious.
I'm glad I asked. Now we know that you really have been tainted. It's one thing to get a dry fish sandwich from McDonald's or something.
Yeah.
A Cubano sandwich. Oh, man, you got to. You're bought.
Bought and paid for, baby. That's right. No, it was very nice. We had a very pleasant discussion. Continue our discussion from what we had done on air. They have a great site down there. Beautiful views from their offices. I guess they're going to be moving to more of a loft area soon because they need the extra space. But I wanted to share something. We've already talked with them, of course, so I think people know a little bit about what they're about. They're presenting web conferencing and allowing for just huge groups of people to be able to view and interact online. And also, too, you can set up your own free or you can charge other people for educational seminars that you want to give. They've partnered, though, recently now with Tech Week, and Tech Week comes and is all over the country and so on. Now, this this November 20th here, they're going to be in Los Angeles, and they've got a great lineup of people, including one of the co-founders of MySpace, former CEO of Beats by Dre. You know, it's some really, really neat people, Brock Pierce, who people might know from Bitcoin stuff. And as a kind of proof of concept sort of thing, Big Marker is going to webcast that using their technologies, and they're making the access to it completely gratis to anybody that wants to check it out. You know, there's a limited number of spots that you can grab, but this is something that you would typically have to pay a nice chunk of change for if you were going to be out there even, and it would not be available at all on your, remotely, to sit in your icy cold apartment instead of being out in L.A. You could do it. So bigmarker.com/techweek. Go check it out. You may not, it may not be your thing, but if you're interested in this kind of stuff that's going on, this is a great opportunity to get access to some people and some information that that would be either not available at all or at the least expensive. So cool stuff. And then I guess after that, they'll expand that into a legit partnership that will be ongoing. And of course, at that point, don't expect to get as much of a free ride. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, that happens all the time, right?
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And that's a good business model. To, you know, give it away if it's valid, then people will be willing to pay for it.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I keep hoping Mrs. Fields Cookies will pick up on that, but.
Oh man, I know those suckers are good. Man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, I should bring in our good friend Jay Garman, of course, here. Let's see if we can get
I'd love to hear from Jay.
Line. I know we've got, and like I said, we've got this great trivia question from last week about the router speed and everything. And I wanna hear what Jay has to say about Kim Kardashian breaking the internet.
Jay would know. Jay Garman,
hey!
Welcome.
Guilty, and what am I being accused of knowing?
We were wondering if we were even going to be able to get a hold of you, because I don't know if you've heard, but the internet was broken, and we have a young lady in California to blame for that. Apparently, she just dropped her butt right on top of the internet, and that was going to break it. But you're here, you made it, so.
I'm clearly lacking context for the butt outage.
Oh,
so.
Really? You missed the butt outage. Wow.
You don't know about Kim K?
Kim Kardashian?
You meant that metaphorically. Yeah. No,
he didn't.
She said
no,
she,
he didn't,
that's
Jay.
What she said. She said, I'm going to break the internet. And then she dropped her butt on it. And
Kassler actually thinks this happened. Actually.
It's really cute when the kids go play with the adult toys and think they can really do things with them. It's like, I'm so popular, I can destroy the internet. Yeah, but whatever. We just landed a probe on a comet. I'll talk to you later.
Three times they landed.
Yes. Yep. We bounced past probe onto a comet, like playing bocce.
Yeah.
And what was the highest bounce, like a kilometer or something? It bounced pretty high.
Something like that, yes.
Yeah.
Now, that's a great thing. Well, and that was the most depressing thing about the whole Kim K deal to me, was this unbelievable, amazing event has occurred, and most of my feed is filled with pictures of somebody's posterior. You know, who's the ass here? That's what I want to know, because I'm looking in the mirror, and this is not cool.
Mike, you are aware of what the internet is for, right?
Porn, right? Wasn't that it?
There's an Avenue Q song about this that you should never play on the air.
Well, I just thought our sequence of conversation was very interesting. We went from talking about Kim Kardashian's butt to a bouncing probe. I thought that's...
there's some sort of alien abduction film that's got to tie this all together at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely some conspiracy theories that are just being started right now. I think we'll hear about. But yeah, no. This is so cool about the probe making it. Now at this point, I know that a lot of the information that we were expecting to get has already been transmitted. It's not close enough or not getting enough sunlight for the solar panels to generate the energy to continue transmitting. Do you know, are they expecting that to resolve or to get more light at some point or to store enough that it can start transmitting again?
They are trying if they can get through to it again, last I checked. If they get a command to it, they're going to reorient it towards the sun. But they were never expecting it to last that long. I mean, they had like a 72-hour like experimental window they wanted. But, basically they weren't expecting it to last all that long, because as the comet approaches the sun, it's going to warm up. And at some point, it's going to start ablating as it gets towards the sun. And at least with my understanding, it's going to shed the probe or harm the probe at some point as it gets closer to the sun. Uh-huh. So that was my understanding of the mission profile. It was always one of those hopes, like, we've got to get 3 good days of data out of it, and if it keeps going, great. And that's sort of like how all space probes work. It's, we're going to send it to X. We're going to have it do 5 things, and we're going to hope like crazy it turns into another Voyager that just keeps transmitting for another 40 years because we're lucky.
Exactly. Now, the ablation process, will that occur, do you think, before or after Bruce Willis sets off the nuclear charges?
Well, it depends on how many nuclear charges Bruce Willis sets off, right? And if Ben Affleck shows up with the beta team in the space buggy in time.
Exactly. That's right. They still got to get them up there. I forgot about that. Yeah. So it's a neat thing. I mean, it does open up, of course, a lot of opportunity for us as far as, knowing now that we can achieve this sort of precision and understanding of the trajectories and getting something there, getting it in at least a single enough piece that it can accomplish some basic things. Now, I've seen a lot of talk and chatter taking this concept and saying, oh, cool, now we can start mining asteroids. I feel like we're a lot further away from that than some of the hype may lead you to believe, but I'm not entrenched enough in it to really have a good feel one way or the other.
Well, so one of the big questions we needed to answer with this mission, and bear in mind, I am not a rocket scientist, is whether or not you can actively use a harpoon to stabilize a lander on an irregularly gravitational body. So this is a refrigerator-sized probe that weighs, like 16 pounds total in the gravity of this thing. And the gravity is irregular because basically it's shaped, and I'm quoting NASA here, like a rubber duck. So its gravitational field is a little wonky. So the intent was that Philae had a thruster effectively on its roof that was going to force it down in combination with the harpoon. The thruster failed, so all we had was the harpoon, and as we talked about previously, the harpoon was not good enough, and it bounced. So we clearly have not engineered a device that can effectively land in one try on a small, irregular gravitational body. Small in this case being, like, larger than Deep Space Nine by a factor of 5.
Yeah.
Duct tape.
rubber duck asteroid tape.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good one, Mike.
I'm gonna trademark that. We'll roll that out next year. Oh, man. And that's the other thing, too, that I found interesting about this story, though, as well, is that, it was really cool. It did come, of course, hot on the heels, too, of India and their successes and other major advances that we made, even though at the same time we kind of here, you know, NASA being shut down, and then you've also got, you know, the whole Virgin Galactic disaster and the other space disaster kind of thing that we've had. Are you thinking, are there other things in the pipeline, I guess, that are going to continue giving us this warm feeling and this excitement about space, or are we going to go through a little bit of a lull now as there's some regrouping and so on?
No, I think, well, first off, I mean, the stuff that, it would be 10 years before we noticed a slough off based on the stuff that's happened recently, or an increase, because it takes so long. I mean, bear in mind, when Philae launched a decade ago, like, someone, I saw this tweet yesterday, and I'm pretty sure I retweeted, like, things that were true when Philae launched, there was no Twitter, Facebook was 27 days old and only available to two houses at Harvard, you know. That's how long ago this launched. You want to talk about going to planning stages, we're talking 15, 20 years ago. So it's going to be 20 years before anything that we learned from today is really going to be applied. So I don't think so. They're playing the long game in this, you know.
I can't see how it got done.
I still want to say that in the last 3 years, we have put a Volkswagen-sized nuclear-powered car with a laser gun on Mars, and it's tooling around. So, you know, let's not go, oh, we can't do space anymore. No, we're pretty okay.
Absolutely. No, it's true. Like I said, I get excited easily, so this is something that excited me a great deal, and hope, you know, with that same kind of idea that, yeah, just, you know what, it's just going to keep building on the shoulders of giants, as they say. So just very cool stuff. And I know that Rob Rigel, he's going to be talking about this a lot when he comes on after us on Rob Shot First. So I hope I didn't steal too much of his thunder here with us. Yeah, he says we're good. All right. He's got some good stuff to share. People should continue listening after we're done. Rob always has just a lot of great stuff. And, hey, he works in aviation, too. So he's got a little bit of an inside bite on that stuff that we do not. So just cool stuff. You know, one thing I was going to take us off the topic of space, but still with flight, is I thought this was a really cool thing that I for some reason had not occurred to me, is talking about drones. And I was just talking about drones a couple minutes ago, because you can go play with a drone at the Verizon store downtown. But but in Belgium, they're prototyping. They haven't gotten to the stage of actually beta testing, but they're prototyping what they call ambulance drones. And these are drones that are designed not to deliver paper to you from Amazon or something, but are designed specifically to help out in case of emergency, where there would be packed with emergency equipment and medicines and first aid type of things to get it quickly, very, very rapidly into the areas where it's needed if there's, you know, accidents or car crash or fires or things like that. And I thought that was a really, really cool way of using these.
I agree. In fact, I saw the portable defibrillator drone, which I thought was interesting, although I am a little concerned about the notion of, hey, you there next to the guy who's convulsing, put these paddles on him and step away. It'll all work out. You'll be fine. Trust the voice in the helicopter.
Yeah, or even worse, just the automated drone coming over and making a decision about who needs it. Stand back, everyone, as the electrical paddles fly out from either side and send 20,000 volts into you. I think some decisions have to be made, of course, about what's going to be an appropriate type of thing to supply. But, you know, it kind of led me on the same thought of a lot of our search and rescue, but also to our urban issues with fires and emergency, emergency response and so on, could be made far, far, far more efficient and effective with some of these drone solutions that we're starting to come up with. I mean, even the idea of just, you know, yeah, the drone's not powerful enough, say, to bring up a foam canister or a fire hose, but using that drone view in order to direct the people on the ground who are putting foam and other fire retardant materials into a burning building could make the difference between something spreading or not.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, this goes back, you know, to police helicopters. You know, Los Angeles has, which is one of the most advanced air divisions of any police department in the country, has, I think, at the outside, like 6 helicopters and never more than 2 in flight at a time. And they're almost always called in specifically for something. Like, they're not just tooling around seeing what they can do. It's, we have a chase here, we have a situation there, we need air support for that in terms of observation and whatnot. And there have actually been some interesting videos about how that works, you know. Whenever officers are involved in a shooting, you know, they immediately send that out so they can get an aerial view of that. And if you think about being able to put, you know, say with every cell phone tower in that same area and in a recharging deployable camera drone so that mm-hmm. you can just say, all right, you don't have to wait for a chopper to scramble and get somewhere. It's immediately on scene. That I think is an interesting middle ground that people are talking about because, well, one, it's near the cell tower, so it's obviously got relay for control, but it's not perpetual eye in the sky. We're always looking. We're always collecting data. We're always watching you. It's, no, we could watch you, and if something happens, then we'll deploy this. Mm-hmm. And I think things like that are going to happen. The other thing about drones is we're still into – they really come in two sizes, size of a Cessna or size of an RC car. And the size of a Cessna, you can put a literal ton of gas in and have them fly for 72 hours – or size of an RC car, you've got a 20-minute flight time and, like, a one-mile range. Mm-hmm. And there's no middle ground. Like, those are your options. So you're not just going to have drones forever and ever and ever circling until we solve, you know, the battery problem, which when we solve that, we'll use it on electric cars first. Before we're using it on RC drones.
Well, and I have heard that the battery technology, and of course it always is getting incrementally better, but I have heard rumors, and I know this comes up every couple of years anyway, rumors that there's going to be this quantum leap in battery efficiency. But aside from that, though, too, I would almost hesitate, I would almost disagree with you a little bit. I don't know if that's going to be as critical a factor with having constant drone presence as it might be, not because of the battery issue, but because of the advances that have been made that I've seen recently in the coordinated but automated AI of multiple units. So, swarm sort of technology. And if you, you know, give a specific instruction, set of instructions to a unit to say, hey, you've got a 30-minute flight time available, so go join the swarm that's near you, but when you need to, you're going to drop out, but that means that we'll always keep that swarm at a set of, you know, 7 or something like this that's constantly doing what it needs to and roaming around in specific surveillance patterns. And I don't think we're too far away from deploying that sort of swarming intelligence and swarming technology to make up for the issues that we have in battery life and other things.
Oh, I would agree that would be technically possible. I would say it would be politically infeasible.
I think the
deployment on demand of these drones is going to be the middle ground between techno-futurists who everything that has a semiconductor microprocessor is awesome and the tinfoil hat crowd. Like, no one should see me ever. Like, there's going to be some sort of political middle ground that I think the technology is going to have to reach. And the notion of we're not having perpetual swarm overflight, because, you can get enough to do that with a quadcopter for half an hour right now, where one powers down and one comes up and making them self-recharging. That's doable right now. I would totally agree with you. Mm-hmm. I don't think, the privacy advocates would allow that. You know, that I don't think is, you know, they're ticked off about traffic cameras.
Yeah. 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 Well, that's why we just shouldn't tell them. You know, don't let them know.
That's good.
Until we catch them breaking the law, then we'll tell them how we did it. But yeah. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. The political aspect of it is going to be a lot more difficult to overcome than the technical challenges. That's for sure.
Well, and I'm still, like, you know, I live in a town where there's an actual park that's designed specifically for flying and remote control cars. It's actually named for former lieutenant governor, and it's kept aside for that, and there's very clear regulations about that. I'm still waiting for the FAA to get real clear on at what altitude you have to be under to fly a remote control. Like, what are the regulations about? Like, there's still a whole lot of regulatory issue about drones. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't right now you can't fly them near airports. Like, they have them at sporting events here in town where you can fly them around, but that's sort of okay because there's rules about what can be above stadiums anyway, and there's special, you know, that sort of thing. If you're not getting above 100 feet, okay. But at some point, we're going to have to figure out, like, what is the drone ceiling? What is the drone floor? What is the, you know, what's the maximum weight of that? Because if there's a flight failure over a residential area, like, what happens? Mm-hmm. You know, because we're going to start getting into, like, 200-pound drones here in the not-terribly-distant future that may be still short-range or relatively gasoline-powered. And, you know, something from 200 feet that weighs 200 pounds falling on my roof is going to leave a mark.
Yeah, that's not what you want to wake up to in the morning. That's for sure. That's for sure. You know, or it's like the YouTube videos of the Eagles, you know, carrying small children off. not a good thing at all. It's going to be one of those things that is going to have enough benefit, though, I think, when we start talking about, like, you know, the emergency response and so on, that hopefully they'll be able to work out some of those issues and address the negative possibilities that are available with that as well.
Absolutely. I mean, going back to the ambulance drone thing, like, I remember seeing the test project where they talked about, I forget where, some startup group wanted to test this, or some university group, where if you had a cell phone and you were in, like, Yellowstone National Park and you needed an epinephrine pen, an EpiPen, like, they could drone flight one to you within the window of anaphylactic shock. Like, they had done that. And so, like, it was literally like an app you could have, like, need EpiPen, hit the app, it would just come in on your cell phone signal and would land within 20 feet of you, and anybody can use an EpiPen. Like, that one's pretty straightforward. So if you need one, or there's somebody with you that needs one, just EpiPen alert, helicopter lands.
Yep. Yeah, and of course, and then right on the tails of that is going to be, you know, the actual EMTs, of course, because, you know, that would be hooked in. Absolutely. I think my daughter is highly allergic to peanuts and a few other things, and that's something I always worry about, is that you've got situations where she doesn't have access to an EpiPen, or the people there don't understand that it's a necessary thing. If you could give kids like that even like a button to push to say, hey, you know what, I think I need an EpiPen, you know, and then it doesn't matter if the school nurse hasn't been informed, or if the park that they're at, there's no one around that understands what's happening. You can cut that out right away.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of the things that one of my favorite authors, Charles Strauss, talked about was like 5 years ago. Like, Mike, you and I, kids are going to grow up, and the notion of being lost is going to be extremely, like, foreign to them, because they'll never have not had a device with GPS on them that could tell them where they were and how to get somewhere else. It's just never going to be something they've dealt with in their sort of cognizant life. Whereas you and I have spent our youth in plenty of neighborhoods, no idea where we were or how to leave.
Yep. 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 Exactly. Exactly. Well, and it's like, it's very similar as well to, now I'm not going to be able to, to think of the name of the series and the world. Oh, you know what? I'm not even going to bring
it
up.
While you're thinking, you know, you're talking about drones, wouldn't it be great if the military would develop a drone that could fly around the wrench for the nuclear silos where they've had the issue with the have you seen that? Did you hear about that, where they were FedExing a wrench around between the various facilities?
No, but now I'm going to have to look that up. But there's some really expensive kind of wrench you only have one of.
Well, that's that's a metaphor for well, it actually happened, is it? But it also was very illustrative in terms of the problems that the program is having. The nuclear weapons are lots of people have been cheating on tests, and they only had one wrench that would fit a nose cone of a missile. So they were so rather than get more wrenches, they were FedExing this wrench all around the various facilities.
Excellent.
So now I can actually picture the regulations that led to that. Like, you may not requisition this because it's a classified design.
Yeah, something like
that. And Steve broke the second one, so now there's only Alpha Wrench.
Oh man! Oh, I remember. I remembered what the what I was trying to think of earlier.
I thought you would.
Ian Banks and the Culture. So the Culture series. He did a whole series. I think Player of Games. I know is one of the first ones in there. Fantastic. Very highly, almost post-human civilization. And one of the neat things with it is that, as you're talking about, not only are people never lost. But most people don't like it's extremely rare for someone to die through misadventure or accident because there's the constant presence essentially of these drones that have the ability to like if you trip and fall off of a balcony you won't fall you'll just stop you know they'll catch you and all this and that's one of the conceits in one of the early books is that there is someone who dies through misadventure and so the individual has to try and figure out how could this possibly have happened in a society that has what you're talking about Jay all the GPS and the drones and the catches and every safety invention an adventure, you know, thing known that we could possibly think of. How could you possibly die through accident again? We're getting there. We're getting there.
Slowly but surely, yes. We're all going to look and sound like Darth Vader when it's over with all these crappy replacement parts, but yes.
So I don't, this is a wonderful conversation. I'm loving listening to it. However, the clock is ticking, and I want to hear the questions.
Yes, we wanted to know what the speed of routers when it was the first router that, and then we got to find out what the new thing to think about is too.
All right. So the question last week, as we were going up on the celebration of the first link of the ARPANET, the precursor of the internet, was made between, I believe, UCLA and Stanford. They had these giant refrigerator-sized routers called interface message processors, IMPs. And the question was, what was the connection speed available to these first routers in the world? And they were as terrible as you might expect, those of us that grew up with modems. It was 50 kilobits a second over a dedicated leased phone line. So not terrible, you know, a 50,000 baud modem, which was more than most of us started with of mine and Mike's age. You know, I remember 300 and 600 and 1200 baud modems. I didn't use them much. My first real personal modem was a 14.4, which was still, you know, less than a third of what the original router was. But bear in mind, this was the only router for the whole internet that went two places.
So at least it didn't have to think very hard, you know.
Well, and you say that, and I still love the fact that during the first internet chat session, it crashed for an hour. They were trying to type the login command, and they got to the O, and it crashed. When they got the router back up, they typed the third letter, and it worked. They were able to – it auto-completed log to login. Auto-complete is not new. So, but we got to L-O crash.
So how long would have taken? Can you do the math for us on this, Jay? How long would it have taken to actually have transmitted a picture of Kim Kardashian's butt?
Well, I think the router could see into the future that's the future it was wreaking for all of us, and it crashed itself.
Yeah. It became self-aware. And immediately thereafter committed suicide. That's what
and the suicide drone could catch it, right?
Exactly. He's self-aware and suicidal all in the same instant with Kim Kardashian in the mix there.
Well, also, I'm not sure a refrigerator-sized router was large enough for Kim Kardashian's butt. So,
oh! Yay! Woo! Yeah, good point. Good point. Oh man. So other than Kim Kardashian's butt bouncing on a router, what should we be thinking about for this coming week?
All right, so for this coming week, we're coming up on the 29th anniversary of the debut of Windows 1.0. The original Windows operating system debuted in November of 1985, and it was not good. Windows didn't really get good until about 3.1. I think we all remember that. But it was groundbreaking and monumental. And the interesting thing about Windows 1.0 is it was the operating system that Microsoft maintained support for longer than any other OS they've ever produced, despite the fact that Windows 2 came out in 1987. They kept up support for 1.0 for an amazingly long time. So the question is, how long did Microsoft continue supporting Windows 1.0?
Oh, wow. Wow. Now that's a great question. Huh. Yeah, I have no idea. I think, like most people, probably my first exposure to Windows really was, Windows 3, 3.1 and things. I remember prior to that, in fact, hand writing a bunch of batch code menuing systems in order to make it easier to get into the things that I wanted to do on my computer. But wow, yeah, how long they maintain support. I'm curious to find out, too, why they chose to maintain support for that long. I would guess there was probably some some compelling reason beyond just that Bill felt philanthropic earlier in his career than people realized. So, man, well, Dave was right. We're right on the nose here. I can see Rob is ready to come in here and start talking a little more about landing equipment and hardware on Comets. So I'm going to let you run, Jay and Dave, both of you. I'm going to kick over into doing some podcast only songs of the week, and I think we'll call it a show. I think we're done.
All right.
Have a good weekend, fellas.
Talk to you in 7 days. I didn't mean to kick that off. Yes, thank you, Jay. Great having you on, Dave. Thank you guys so much, and we'll talk to you. We'll talk to you soon.
See you next time.
Take care.
Bye. Bye.
Jay Garman. That's jaygarman.net. You can get more on him there, and of course, our good friend Dave Sparky Saganaki. I wasn't kidding. Rob is right here. He's ready to go. He's in the room. I am going to, in fact, make it a true podcast only song of the week. I will do you a little what in the butt from South Park, but then for the podcast only song of the week, I think we're gonna do maybe We Can Make the World Stop. That's a little closer to an appropriate song from the Glitch Mob. And have a great week, everyone. Thank you for listening. As always, you are listening right now to Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. Don't turn the dial. Stay tuned. Got Robbie Rigel with Rob Shot First coming up next. Take care.
Everyone knows it's butters.
Well, that-